think we're going to go ahead and start. Call to order the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Members, it is our last committee meeting, so this has gone very fast, as it seems like it always does. There are treats. Hope you'll have some of the treats. And I also want to make sure I thank the staff. So Sarah Benskofer, the CA, and Matthew Colley. As you know, they take on a lot of the work here, make sure it's get done. And Danielle, for her work and a lot of last-minute things we give her. And Emily, as well. Thank you for all your work, as well as our committee page. We appreciate all your work. So what will happen now, this will be referred to finance, where it will be split into two bills. So it's our work isn't done yet. We'll all continue to work on this. And half will go, Article 1 will go into the Department of Education. Is Department of Education language will go into the K-12 bill, Representative Greiling's bill. And then the Article 2 will go into the Health and Human Services bill, both of which are not moving very quickly. So I think this is going to be a long process. I would like to move that House File 2760 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Finance. And we have some amendments. Members, we will take up the DE1 amendment first. This is basically the delete all amendment. And we went through the omnibus bill last Tuesday. Is there any discussion on this? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. I'm going to take up next the A5 amendment. Representative Kulik Jackson, is that your amendment?
It is, Madam Chair. And it is moving the effective date back. It was originally, I think, in September. To allow the department a little more time. What they're basically going to be doing is tinkering with the software. It has to do with the timing of reapplication for CCAP.
And this obviously is helpful and makes it go smoother to have the date move back.
Yes, so it works for them, and it should not delay implementation, actually.
Good.
So it's it's fine.
That's a good thing. Would you like to move your amendment?
I move the A5 amendment to House File 2760.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the A5 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A1-2 amendment. Representative Peterson, is that... your amendment, do you want to move the A1-2?
Yes, I move the A1-2 amendment.
The A1-2 amendment actually is inserted into the area where we talk about the State Advisory Council on Early Ed and Care, which is operating currently. And it takes the duties or the ideas that we had for the Office of Early Learning, establishes a task force, which actually is being formed within that state advisory group already, and it gets some specificity to the members of the team, and then also to looking at all of those pieces of an office that we think are important and to come back with some recommendations. And I think it's a very wise thing to do, and we're hoping that we can get some private funding to be able to accommodate this. And I know that within this Governor's Advisory Council, they've been operating on a very lean budget because they don't have much money either. So, but they've been doing the work, and they've been doing it well, and so we'd like to be part of that. We are part of it already, but we'd like to expand this particular piece into that group that will be working on the office.
Is there any discussion? Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, did I hear correctly that the organization is already moving towards creating this task force?
One of the, Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, one of the areas that has been assigned to them, yes, is the office. And so this would just add some parameters and specificity to what we'd like to have considered.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, is the council supportive of the specificity that you are creating for them?
Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, at this point, no, but I think they would welcome it. They may have other ideas also. This does not limit them, but it certainly is something that they need to talk about. And I think it's things that we've considered here, but we need to put it in a broader agenda with a variety of stakeholders who would then discuss and talk about the issue and determine if this is possible and if it works.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And finally, Representative, is it your intention that the members of this task force serve on a voluntary basis, or will they be reimbursed for expenses received per diem, et cetera? Because I don't see that language one way or the other.
Madam Chair, actually, it does say that they'll have to be reimbursed with private funds. Actually, that council is pretty voluntary. The Governor's Council, now they may get some federal funding to be able to reimburse folks, but much of the work has been voluntary. And the legislators who serve on there certainly are on a voluntary basis, and many of the people on this council already have jobs within some form of government that they could participate without any kind of reimbursement. But we're hoping also for some private reimbursement.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. Members, we put together this council, or this council was put together with our blessing. I think the last thing we would want to do is micromanage the work that they do, so I'd encourage a no vote.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Similar line of questions, but relative to the P20 group that is meeting to look at the kind of seamless and integrated system from early ed all the way up through higher ed. And I just noticed on the second page, lines 2.1, 2.4, and 2.8, those seem to be redundant with, overlapping with, the mission of the P20 group. And I'm curious whether or not there's a sense that this would be coordinated with them somehow, or it seems like we're just duplicating a lot of different groups, the Governor's Council, the Early Childhood Caucus, and the P20 group. How would this fit in with the P20 group?
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, I really think this could enhance the P20. Now, the Governor's Council is a federally mandated council and one that the Governor has established. But this certainly could work with the P20, but they haven't gotten into the specificity or even looking at that whole system of early childhood. Do they need to? Yes, and I think they could use the work that we develop as they put together their recommendations for a seamless system, and it should be part of that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Downey.
Follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have just gotten started on that P20 group, and the first agenda item was a longitudinal data system, and I think the design of that is actually to go kind of coast to coast here, and so one of the tasks here for this group is to develop and manage an effective data collection system. That seems to be entirely redundant with what the university and the P20 group and all of the education stakeholders are working on. So I don't mean to belabor the point, but it just seems, to Representative Biskin's point, we've got at least three groups focused on this now, and to add another one into the mix, I'm not quite sure what value it adds, and probably creates more confusion. And then just another maybe reason for me not to support this amendment, we're also asking this task force, and not asking, we're saying they must consider designing this Office of Early Learning, and I know we've gone back and forth on that a couple times here in this committee, and the Office of Early Learning bill as presented isn't part of our bill, so it seems like we're getting ahead of ourselves on that Office of Early Learning and asking this task force to kind of go out and do the work that the legislature isn't interested in doing and start designing that. So anyway, I'll just urge a no vote for those reasons. Madam Chair, thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, I was tracking my colleague, Representative Biskins, but I think we came out on a different end in terms of supporting and not supporting the amendment. I thought the questions were really good questions, and Apparently, Representative Peterson says that there may be elements here that the current group is not either talking about or perhaps not even, we can't gauge whether they're supportive or not. I nonetheless think it's important for the legislature to express the things that we care about and that we want these entities to be supportive of. And in particular, I'm intrigued by the language on 1.2, where they're asked to consider how to consolidate and coordinate resources and public funding streams for early childhood and ed and child care and clearly members. I mean, that is one of the biggest challenges that we face as a legislature into the foreseeable future, which is how is it that we can develop a much more efficient, if you will, and still effective use of public resources, because we've got some very real limitations that are facing us. And so to the degree that this group is not considering that, that to me would be a very strong expression on the part of the legislature that this is a real high priority for us. And then on the second question Representative Biskins asked about the per diem possibilities, I do note the language for private funds. We could certainly strengthen this language to be clear that there isn't any expectations, at least from state funds, relative to compensation. And I would just offer, Representative Peterson, this is successful, but perhaps you might want to look at that, just to be very clear about that. But again, and Representative Downey, on the P20, I used to be very active on that. I haven't been of late. I know that the P part of P20 is a relatively new addition to that group, and so I don't want to say that they're not heavily focused on these issues. But again, I think to the degree that this legislature can express some strong expectations, even though we're not speaking to that P20 group, that they can reference back to this group of what we're expecting out of our public entities in this regard, I think is a good thing to do. I'm trying to think of our enabling language last year with the P20 Council. I don't think we were anywhere near prescriptive, if you will, in terms of our expectations that are being laid out here. So anyway, I just think it's a good amendment, and I'd look forward to us being able to express really strong expectations of what we expect from these groups relative to things that we think are very important.
Representative Peterson, can you tell us about how there already was some language for the Governor's Council to take a look at this? Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, there is language in the Governor's Council to form or to have a group look at this. They really haven't proceeded that far, in doing that yet. And we would undoubtedly be following them, and probably the same folks who are listed in here would, if there was a committee or a task force, when it is established, most of the people here would be part of that and would want to be part of it. And I think as a legislature, we probably would want to help get some more teeth into what they would do. And I think they're looking for some direction also. And so this gives at least a start, some specificity, and they can begin to really work on each of these issues and come back with some recommendations.
Members, if you don't know, I'm a member of the Governor's Advisory Council, and generally the work has been split up into three subcommittees. Do you know if it's been picked up by one of the subcommittees?
I don't know that, Madam Chair. I haven't had time to follow it lately, last month or so.
So that's generally how the Council's working right now, is in these subcommittees, as we had testimony in this committee, kind of awaiting strategic planning grant funds, and then that will bring continued focus to where the Council is going. Any more questions? Any closing comments, Representative Peterson?
No, I think that it's important that we continue to address this issue, to talk about it, and this is a good place to do it. And it certainly has, I think, a broad array of stakeholders, and so I would ask for your support.
Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okay. We have the A3 amendment members. Everybody have that? Representative Downey, is that your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move it?
Move the A3 amendment.
Would you want to explain the amendment?
Sure, and I just draw members' attention to the specific section of the delete all on page 9, section 3. We are in that section specifically directing the Commissioner of Human Services to utilize $500,000 of the federal child care development funds for preparation for QRIS. I think we'd do better just to let the department have the flexibility to use those grant monies as they see fit, and perhaps they would see fit to use it for this exact purpose, but not to tie their hands for it, especially with as many variables are in play here. I know we were depending a little bit or thinking that perhaps these federal challenge grants might come through, and that would provide some extra impetus on the quality side of things. Doesn't look like that's going to come through, so I'm not sure if we know for sure as a committee that this is the exact right way to direct this funding, so I'm just suggesting that we strike Section 3 and allow the commissioner and the department to figure out how to spend those monies. Again, it might be perfectly reasonable in their purview to do exactly this, but just not to tie their hands.
Any discussion? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really think that this is an important piece of the bill. You know, we already have the quality rating system, you know, as a piece of our goals and where we're going and part of statute. And this simply, directs some money into the training that would provide really good programs. And, you're right, the department might want to do this anyway because it is a really very good use of the money. But I think that when it's in statute, we're assured that it will go for developing those good programs. And I think it's so important that I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on this.
A roll call has been requested. Is there any other discussion? Representative Downey, any closing comments or any more comments, discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think this whole the implementation time frame, the scope, the nature of the quality rating system rollout, should it occur, is very wet cement, not super defined. And I could see us directing the department to spend this money in a way that, frankly, in the end, isn't directly correlated to the eventual implementation strategy. For example, if we would decide to stick with something that's more kind of private sector and market-based in terms of a QRIS, we could very well be spending $500,000 to build something different or to train providers in something that isn't what we ultimately implement. So, again, I think we're just overly tying the department's hands and, again, presuming, and I don't know whether this is a fair presumption, frankly, I don't think it is, that the state of Minnesota will roll out a state-administered quality rating system. So I just want to urge caution on that front and let the department make its own decisions with the money. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Peterson?
I think the dialogue gets – thank you, Madam Chair. I think the dialogue between Representative Downey and I today continues. But and you have some good points, but, you know, in terms of – not having all the details in place yet, but we do know what a quality rating system looks like. I mean, we do have those programs defined, and I think the goals and the standards are there, and it's really good programming. And it's just one small incremental step as we move along this road to getting a quality rating system where we know that all children have access to quality child care and good school readiness programs. And so this simply is one step in preparation for that.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to add that I just looked at an email that I just received from one of my constituents that, you know, in greater Minnesota, this is going to provide a statewide ability for statewide child care systems to receive training, coaching, consultation. And this email is from one of my childcare providers that not only receives that training, but also trains as well. And she says that these grants are much, much needed in greater Minnesota for sure. So I wanted to just throw that in the mix as well.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I we've run into this in a couple of different committees, and I just want to make sure we aren't creating false hopes here. I mean, we saw proposals for the rollout of a QRIS to the tune of $50 million, $60 million, and the goal of those QRIS rollouts was to hit 50% of the providers in Minnesota. And so to think that $500,000 compared to $50 million is actually, Representative Ward, going to guarantee that somebody in your district or somebody in anybody's district is going to see the benefits of this expenditure, I think is really overstating the scope and the reach of $500,000 in training and coaching. There's no prescription here as to how much of that $500,000 actually has to hit a center. For all I know, we could spend $500,000 building the curriculums and training the people to do the training. I mean, we're overstating the potential benefit here if we think that somehow this particular provision is really going to materially advance a statewide QRIS. I mean, to the extent that it's deployed effectively, it could have some benefit. But again, let's not overstate the value of this or the certainty of the value of this. And let's also recognize that the department can do good work on its own without us telling them exactly how to spend it.
Well, members, this was my bill, so I feel I need to speak to it. We've worked with the department to come up with a $500,000 agreement to come from the CCDF funds. The idea was, in a year when we have almost a $1 billion budget deficit, how can we move QRS ahead without giving it any money directly? This is taking funds that are already designated to be spent out for childcare training and coaching and consultation around the state, and then focusing specifically on the QRS system. So I actually think it creates that continued momentum for the quality rating system. It is not clear what the future is. Unfortunately, we know that the next biennium looks worse, much worse, than this biennium. So the future of QRS is somewhat up in the air. We do know that MELF discontinues their involvement and sunsets, I think, is it in June of 2011? End of 2011. So then it will be sort of up for grabs. That right now, I would say it's very uncertain if the state would be picking that up because of the money, but there are private-public partnerships of people that are interested in working with the state to do that, which is kind of exciting. You know, to think about that if there's groups that have been already investing in the quality rating system that want to see it continue. So as I see it, this is really a small amount of money from federal monies that already exist to increase quality child care. It gives the opportunity for a provider, such as from Representative Ward's district, to get ready for ratings. So what we found is the providers don't necessarily like to jump in, get rated, and say, we've heard people here testify if they get a 2, they feel kind of bad about that. And if I'm hoping, I know there's providers here, if I'm not saying this correctly, you can write the committee an email. But they would prefer to have these kinds of funds so they can get ready. What is ratings all about? What kind of, it's fairly rigorous. You know, what are we going to have to go through? Whether it's, we're finding one of the big areas of focus is curriculum. What kind of curriculum should they be having? And we're finding the real benefit of this, and I think probably Representative Ward's provider there is there's a lot of interaction with an outside expert about what they're doing in their child care, how they're interacting with the kids, everything from health and safety measures to quality, real quality. And what we find, members, is the real quality comes with that interaction with that child. So making sure that these providers, you know, and all the paperwork we make them do and all the food programs and everything else, but that they're spending that time really making sure kids are learning, making sure kids are growing and doing well in their child care. So I think this is a good part of the bill, and we've worked hard with the department to have this happen, and hope we can keep it in. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask a question of the chair. What's the mechanism for these grant funds to be distributed then throughout Minnesota? And maybe specifically, does the provider and Representative Ward's district already have an application in, or is some of this money earmarked to specific providers that we'd have some assurance that the folks in Representative Ward's district are going to receive some of these grant funds?
You know, I'd like to ask the department to talk about this. My understanding is it goes into a fund, and these funds are sort of the RFPs are put out by the regional child care resource and referral agencies, and then that child care can apply through that process to be part of this. But Ms. Swenson-Klatt, could you clarify that for us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department would envision flowing these funds through the child care resource and referral system in the same way or a similar way that the child care services grants program delivers resources to providers. So at the local level, applications are submitted to district child care resource and referral agencies, and those applications would be considered and by the local agency, and then funding would be awarded.
So could Representative Ward's constituent apply for the funds through that the process you just mentioned?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Swenson-Klatt, are there grant applications already in for this money? Is it in any way already kind of, I don't want to say earmarked because that has a negative connotation, but is it already kind of through the pipeline of decision making that we know where this grant money would go, or is it still a totally open process?
Ms. Swenson-Klatt.
Madam Chair and Representative Downey, because this legislation hasn't passed yet, the process for applying for these specific funds is not in place. We have been doing some preliminary planning in anticipation of its passage, but applications would be made available to providers at the once the legislation is effective.
Any other questions? Representative Hamilton. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And about 2-3 weeks ago, I had a town hall meeting, and there was a gentleman there that brought up a concern about the amount of money that is spent on studies and planning activities. And he offered up many examples, and the dollars were substantial. He obviously did his research. And he said, these are projects or programs that never actually materialize. And again, he said that's extremely concerning to them, and especially when you take a look at the budget deficit that we have currently. With the uncertainty that this project or program does have, I guess my question is, could the department, and I think it was answered, but I want to be certain on this, could the department still go forward with this even without the language and still have the flexibility on whether or not the money should be spent in this area?
Well, let's ask the department. Ms. Swenson-Klatt.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, yes, the department could move forward with an initiative like this.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just say that we actually knew that, and we debated whether to put this into a bill form, and we had talked with the department, has been very good about working with us on quality child care, moving the whole issue forward. I have to tell you, I mean, the future really truly is not determined, but it's the way you get to making good decisions is you have to start to put things into place. One of the reasons we decided to put this into a bill and decided to include this in an omnibus bill is actually for the benefit, we're hoping, of the members of the legislature, so that it could be highlighted, so it could be talked about. So we had some initiative on QRS, because if you look at the rest of the bill, this is it. And this is what we're able to do, is repurpose money in this common environment. And I think with that, I hope you understand we are trying to be very respectful of the fact that there's no money and that the department was, we were working with them, but we wanted to position this as an opportunity to do more education with the members, because I don't know about you all, but this is one complex topic. You know, quality rating systems, how they work, if they're effective, the costs, and if we're going to be if we were to take over the MELF system, we certainly, and I don't even know if MELF's here, but we certainly know they have the Cadillac, and we'd be doing a, you know, a Chevy at the most. And so we know that we could never take it over necessarily where they're at, but we have to. What I've learned working all with you members and you advocates out there is we got to keep the dream alive, or, you know, it goes away. And I think that if we're going to get all kids ready for school by 2020, we have to start raising the bar. And the way to raise the bar is to say that we're going to have quality child care, and we're going to have kids, consumers, all of us, our kids, our grandkids can go to quality child care places. So there was a lot of discussion around that. I have to say, you know, my CIA and I worked very hard on that, and she often is one of my best advisors, and talked about the advantages of what we thought would be a good idea is bring this as a bill, which I think is a good idea after we take the vote. No, it's a good idea. It's still a good idea, but it, you know, gets caught up in moments like this. This is what the legislature is about. We all know that. We work in the arena of ideas. You know, so we truly to have a debate on ideas and how this is going to affect our young people and our young families, I think, is important. Any other questions? Okay. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I do want to echo your sentiments and your logic here. I would point out, members, that we don't know who the administration is going to be in the year 2011.
That's true, too.
And I think that as we go through a transition period of time, that the consistency of expectations, as I said earlier in the other amendment, that legislative intent and leadership and direction continue to be expressed as an expectation. It is our, you know, certainly our right as an equal branch of government to be able to lay out, you know, that direction, that leadership for the people of Minnesota. Obviously, you've been working, and I haven't been involved in this particular issue, but you and others have been working pretty closely with the department. It sounds like, for the most part, you know, there's agreement here. Of course, the issue is, you know, the issue, the limitation of resources. But, you know, who's to say in 2011, you know, what that relationship's going to be like, regardless of which party winds up in the administrative branch. And so I think that this is a modest and proper expression of our will, and let's see where it takes us beyond 2011.
And just to note, too, this is an initiative of the Early Childhood Caucus, which is co-chaired by Representative Peterson and Representative Nornes, Senator Clark, Senator Michelle, staffed by Lisa Venable, who's here today. But there also has been a group really working hard on this, so I don't want to say it's just me bringing this forward. It's really a whole group of legislators. Any other discussion? Okay. Representative Downey, anything else? Thank you. Representative Downey renews his motion for the A3 amendment. The roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Slawik?
No.
Bly? Biskins?
Yes.
Downey?
Yes.
Gryling?
No.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Jackson?
No.
Lane?
No.
Mac?
Yes.
Mariani?
No.
Nornes? Peterson?
No.
Rosenthal?
No.
Ward?
No.
Okay. Seeing 4 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment does not pass.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ward.
Could I just have a point of personal privilege just for a minute, please? I know we're...
So, do this in committee. Point of personal privilege, Representative Ward.
Madam Chair, we have a very special guest in our committee today that members may or may not know. Former Senator Don Samuelson, who served this body and the Senate over 34 years. He was the president of the Senate. He was a chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. He's a strong supporter of early childhood and quality child care, and he's down here today doing some lobbying, and I just want to recognize him in the audience, former Senator Don Samuelson.
Thank the mayor. Well, glad you're with us today, and thanks for your good work. There's some treats if you want some afterwards, too. So, and I think that was, is that your same district, Representative Ward? Yes. Yeah. Good. Great. Well, let's see. Next, we have the A2 amendment. Does everybody have the A2 amendment? And Representative Downey, is that your amendment?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. I'd move the H2760A2 amendment.
Okay. Representative Downey moves the amendment. Would you like to explain it?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, technically, in terms of the bill language, it's very straightforward. Simply striking the words social and emotional on page 5, line 26, from the description of the kindergarten readiness assessment. And, Madam Chair, I'm having the page the staff pass around the current kindergarten entry assessment form. And for me, this is just kind of, as a parent, a basic common sense amendment. I looked at this form when I first got into the legislature and wasn't quite sure what we were actually looking for from our kindergarten readiness assessment. For me, as somebody who actually did have their kid in a half day once or twice a week pre-K program, I kind of judged it based on whether they could behave themselves in class and whether they could write their name and recite the alphabet and count to 100. For me, just common sense, that was really what would be helpful and beneficial for somebody entering kindergarten. And so I looked at the assessment form when I first saw it. I thought, oh my God, you know, what is all this stuff? And so I don't know that we have any kind of social and emotional assessments in the K-12 system, and yet here we are kind of building an assessment that's much bigger than what we're even measuring in the K-12 world. So I guess in part for just common sense, why we're asking our pre-K and early child care world to take responsibility for the social and emotional development of our kids, why that's important for kindergarten readiness, just wasn't intuitive to me, and also for the sake of consistency with what we're doing in K-12, it just seems to me we open up a whole area of training and highly specialized, almost psychologist kinds of skill sets, a whole branch of expertise that would be required of our pre-K and early childhood center environments. And if we go to a QRIS, now we're pushing that into every home environment that might want to avail themselves of public funding for the kids in their program. So it seems like it's just an area that's too big and too broad for the early child care arena. So I just suggest that we strike it here today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Representative Lane?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I look at the first one on the sheet you gave us, part one, personal and social development, you yourself mentioned B, that you expected to him to show signs of being able to follow directions. And then I look at D and E, and I recognize that those would be early indicators of Asperger's syndrome, things we would want to know. To me, that this area of personal and social development is what early childhood is all about. The rest of it is getting ready, but this is the key thing that we're looking in young people to make sure that they're growing properly. I would like a roll call.
Okay. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will prepare the roll, but any further discussion, Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I was a special ed teacher for 22 out of the 34 years in my career, and most of that 22 years in special ed was with emotional behavior disordered kids, young children. And I know this, that when we get to especially our most needy children, whether it be emotional, behavioral, learning disabled, development disabled, whatever that their situation may be, when we get to them earlier, we are going to have a higher success rate down the road with them. whether it be for social, whether it be for emotional, whether it be development disabled or learning disabled. So, you know, I just, as a practitioner of many years with children that are EBD, emotional behavior disordered, knowing that the impact that we can gain from early intervention is critical for us. So I would strongly not go along with A2. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we have plenty of time, I'll weigh in strong opposition also to the amendment. Not only do we need to catch Asperger's and mental illness early, which I think is often what people want to skip when we think of taking out social and emotional, Representative Downey has done us the favor of showing that the A through E here have actually not a lot to do with that other than how they might be indicators of somebody showing early signs of mental illness, which we definitely need to find out. But Representative Downey and members, I had the luxury of going to kindergarten on last Friday with my granddaughter. I was there all day long. And I have to say, there was no FIED, so I'm all of a sudden a big advocate for that unfunded mandate. And sitting on that rug and listening and everything, it just it was a hard, long day. But the kids who had learned self-concept, self-control, eagerness, curiosity, could get along with others and adults, and had empathy and went and got an adult if there was a fight about to break out, were the ones who were also able to do the math and the language arts and the reading, and they all go hand in hand. You can't separate them out. If you have a child who's not ready, then their learning is impacted, and probably Representative Downey's child already had all these things when he went there because he had such a good father. And that's why Representative Downey doesn't realize the importance. But I was in a Washington, D.C. school where this is needed, and it's needed everywhere.
Representative Peterson?
Well, I just have to weigh in, too, because I actually have been a kindergarten teacher for a few years before I went to the high school, and I'm licensed in that area as well as early childhood. And every teacher I know in kindergarten does look at the social emotional growth of their students, because that it's as important as all of the rest of the pieces here, and most of it, maybe it's the terminology emotional, and you know, you get into that terminology and some people expand on that, but it really is just dealing with whether a child can sit and listen, has attention skills, whether the child is able to interact with other children, is not running around hitting or biting or being cruel. You know, those are things that not only the teacher has to make note of, but then has to deal, you know, has to talk to parents about. You immediately call a parent and say, you know, your child is having some difficulties in interacting with the other children, and how do we deal with this? And sometimes the parents have solutions. Sometimes we find outside solutions. We will call in a social worker or someone else who has some skills to help a family to deal with these issues. But I think, you know, this A, on this A through E, they're probably the more important things in both preschool and kindergarten, helping children to be able to interact, to be able to listen, to be able to respond. Because if they can't do that, all of the other learning becomes much more difficult. And we're not talking here about deep psychological analysis, and we're just talking about the basics. And I think if you talk to any teacher, particularly in kindergarten, they all deal with this, and they will all, in their conferences, talk with parents. That's what first thing the parent wants to know. And I know that my granddaughter, she does really well in the learning, but she's a little too social. She likes to talk to everybody, and they're, they're having to, she's having to learn how to sit and listen sometimes and not quite be as aggressive, so in her social skills, shall I say. So anyway, those are the kind, they're just simple little things. We're making it sound so complicated here, but it really is just part of the whole package of how a teacher interacts with a classroom and with their students, her or his students.
Representative Downey, or Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's where the concern comes in as far as how sometimes the definition or the worry is that the definition will get expanded and all of a sudden something so simple becomes very confusing and all of a sudden a child is labeled in one direction or the other, right? And I think that's where the concern comes in as a parent that I have. But also your point about I have two children in school. Well, one's graduating this year, but as a parent, I want to know if my child is acting up and everything. And what I would hate to have happen is that if we did take this out, that all of a sudden there'd be a barrier there where the teacher wouldn't be able to communicate back. I don't know if that's the intention as well, but I see both sides of this. But again, I don't want to make it so to the point where the teacher wouldn't be able to respond back to the parent if the child was acting up emotionally or whatever the case may be. But I also don't want it to be so intrusive that my child is labeled, you know, unfairly or whatever the case.
Representative Downey. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is good discussion, and this is the intention of this amendment. You know, we heard a lot of different things. On the one hand, this is just about sitting still and behaving and giving the early childhood provider the opportunity to communicate with parents. That's just good basic stuff. Nobody argues against that. And then we had other comments about, well, this is about diagnosing mental illness and Asperger's, and do we have enough FIAD, and do they show empathy? And Representative Ward, I actually wrote this down when you said it, something about we get to them earlier, and I was wondering who we is and who them is. And so this is what is problematic for me, is that we have these very vague definitions, very subjective terminology that could mean so many different things. And I think Representative Lane and others who actually pointed out the very specific things under the personal and social development content area, you know, and I frankly agree with you. I'll withdraw the amendment, Madam Chair. I think it's been a good discussion, one that I have kind of wanted to have, and I know you were very good working with me on some things in this bill beforehand, and so I'm not going to push hard for the legislature to review everything that's going on in the department or from the Early Childhood Caucus, but this is one area where I think maybe some legislative discussion and a furtherance of the conversation that we just had as a committee would make a lot of sense, so that social-emotional isn't just left out there as a really vague term in statute, and that maybe we even take a look at the kindergarten assessment form at some time down the road. So with that, I'll withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Downey withdraws the A2 amendment. I just want to say one comment here, for going forward, is that both Representative Mack and I sit on the Autism Task Force, and it is heartbreaking that when the number of families that have little kids and they don't know what's going on with them. And we heard this morning about the therapies they're going to and the interventions that they're trying, and there just happens to be a huge spike, and we all know this, and we said diagnoses of autism or people that suspect autism. So we know somewhere this has to fit in, and we, as we see in our work, and there's a emphasis on Somali kids in the committee and the Somali families and the high incidence. I think it's something we really have to pay attention to as legislators. And early childhood is about getting to ready for school by 2020, but it really also is about those interventions and helping families with the interventions, because we know we see families that they're having a hard time understanding what's going on with their kids because you don't know what's going on. So I think that's part of the social-emotional development. Wow. With that, members, we have an oral amendment, I believe. Representative Downey, do you have an oral amendment to the overall House File 2760 to the delete all?
I do, Madam Chair, and it's, thank you. It's just a, I think, and if the department wanted to offer a comment, I think this is language that they actually might have provided, just to tighten up the provision in Section 2 on page 1, where we talk about a charter school providing screening, informing the families. There's another reference to that below the one that's inserted on 1.19 and 1.20. Down below on 1.24, it the statute currently instructs a school district to inform all resident families, and it seemed that if we're adding charter schools to that, that we should also add charter schools in that line. So if I can just read the language that was suggested by the department, and I would suggest as compared to right after district on line 1.24, I think it makes more sense after the word 7 on line 1.25. And we'd insert, and a charter school that provides screening must inform families that apply for admission to the charter school.
Can you repeat that?
Yes. And a charter school that provides screening must inform families that apply for admission to the charter school.
I see. It's the same language as up on 1.19.
Yes.
1.20. Okay.
And that's just to make sure that it's clear that both school districts and charter schools would conform to the same provisions of informing. So I think it's just a very simple clarification, technical amendment. If the department has any objections, I'd be glad to hear from them.
See, Representative Lane?
I would just make the comment that, to my understanding, a charter school is considered a school district, and therefore this is repetitive.
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The big problem would be if you don't put charter schools, the word resident. Charter schools have no resident pupils.
Representative Greiling, I know the department, I do want them to talk about this, so Representative Greiling.
And Madam Chair, we did find out when we were discussing the permanent school trust lands that charter schools do not get that $50 per pupil or 55 or whatever it is because they aren't school districts.
So the department, do you support the language or neutral or what's your position on the language?
Madam Chair, representatives of the committee. My name is Lisa Barnes with the Department of Education. We would support the language. It does just clarify that if a charter school does choose to do screening like a school district, that they need to follow all the same things that a school district does, including, as the current statute says, the school district has to do acknowledge that conscientious objector, and that the charter school would also have to acknowledge that in their information to the parents.
Can you tell us how many charter schools are doing screening?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be one.
Yes, so there is one charter school doing screening. So it's kind of setting, but that sets the precedent, so you need to get this into the language. So I think, Representative Downey, you might have your amendment that we can all support. Is there any more discussion? As you said, you're gonna pass one here. Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, so that is all of the amendments. I renew the motion that House File 2760 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and the bill is passed. And with that, we've got one more set of minutes to pass here. Okay, Representative Ward, I moves approval of the minutes for March 23rd. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for March 23rd are passed. Again, thank you all for being part of the committee and for your good work.
Madam Chair,
adjourned.
I watched that video that we couldn't get.
Oh,
it was great.
Representative Kulik-Jackson.
Yes.
I actually saw it too.
That was funny.
So we all need to watch it. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God. It's so